Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 In text 13, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada on the Acharya of ISKCON. Ityabhivyaharitam tasya akaranya surapungavaha apramana vidastasya tatatetyan vamangsata. Translation: the chiefs of the demons were not very expert in deciding things. Upon hearing the sweet words of Mohini Murti, they immediately assented. Yes, they answered, what you have said is all right. Thus the demons agreed to accept her decision. Text 14 and 15. Atopo shakradasnana hutva cha avishanalam datva go viprabhute bha kritasvast yayanad vijay Yato pajoshang vasangsi paridhaya hatanite kusheshu pravishan sarve prag agrish vabibhushitaha. The demigods and demons then observed a fast. After bathing, they offered clarified butter and oblations into the fire and gave charity to the cows and to the brahmanas and members of the other orders of society, namely the kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, who were all rewarded as they deserved. Thereafter, the demigods and demons performed ritualistic ceremonies under the directions of the brahmanas. Then they dressed themselves with new garments according to their own choice, decorated their bodies with ornaments, and sat facing east on seats made of kusha grass. Purport: the Vedas enjoin that for every ritualistic ceremony, one must first become clean by bathing either in the water of the Ganges or Yamuna or in the sea. Then one may perform the ritualistic ceremony and offer clarified butter into the fire. In this verse, the words paridhaya ahatani are especially significant. A sannyasi or a person about to perform a ritualistic ceremony should not dress himself in clothing sewn with a needle. Here we read that a sannyasi should not dress himself in clothing sewn with a needle, not with sewn cloth. However, we see that pretty much all the sannyasis in our Krishna conscious movement wear sewn cloth. Actually, Vidyapurna Maharaj doesn't. But other, apart from him, I think all of them do. And Prabhupada himself did. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who introduced sannyas in the modern age in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, he would also wear sewn cloth, especially when he went to a function where there were many dignitaries of the material world present, which was another unusual thing for a sannyasi to do. Sannyasis, following the example of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said he didn't want to go anywhere near a king, but not such a materialistic person. The Shastra says you shouldn't even look in the face of a degraded cowied, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would invite them to be the chief guests of honor. The British governor, Malcolm Haley, governor of UP, that meant United Provinces at that time, North India, to be the chairman or the guest of honor at his important preaching functions. He would also wear leather shoes, dress in clothes, go in a car. He came to Vrindavan in a car, Jaguar sedan, very high-class car. In those days, there weren't hardly any cars. I mean, even 20, 30 years ago in India, there were hardly any cars. What to speak of in those days? So to have a car, that was, what, the 1930s, that was very rare in India. Only very big kings and the top British, they would have. So he came, and I'm sure no one had ever come in a car to Vrindavan before. Because who would go? Only pious people, Hindus, would go. And course, some Christian priest is reported as having gone there, but not in a car, not like that. I mean, even the priests, they didn't have cars. Not that didn't come till much later. And even if some kings may have visited, we see the Maharaja of Bharatpur especially. He constructed many lavish buildings in Vrindavan, but probably out of respect, pious sentiment. He also probably had a car, but probably didn't come in one to Vrindavan. And there weren't any roads, proper roads. Now we have highways you can drive up and down the country. I mean, even 20 years ago in India, the main roads were just a wreck. So there were no proper roads. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came as a sannyasi, a renunciate, to Vrindavan in a Jaguar sedan, saying, "I have come to teach the so-called Babajis how to actually follow Rupa Goswami." They were outraged. "Who is this person? He's chastising us, telling us that we're not properly following Rupa Goswami." Rupa Goswami went in a loincloth, and he slept under a different tree every night. He was a vairagi in the true sense of the word. How can you be a vairagi? You're coming in your fancy clothes in a car to Vrindavan. How can you do it? Like, they considered it to be like a sacrilege. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that to follow Rupa Goswami doesn't mean to imitate. There's a difference between imitation. Rupa Goswami sat under a different tree every night. He didn't stay in one place. But what were his activities? He was fully absorbed in love of Krishna. So simply to imitate him will not help you. But we have to do the work of Rupa Goswami, which Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said this: "Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kata Mahyam Dadati Swapadanti Kam." We offer our respectful obeisances to Rupa Goswami, who has established within this world the desires of Lord Chaitanya. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has many desires. His inner desire is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radharani and Krishna combined. But the desire that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur emphasized was Prithivite Ache Jatanagaradi Gram Sapatra Prachahoibe Moranam, that his name would be spread all over the world. If we see Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how he explains his verse, Sri Chaitanya Mano Abhishtam, he explains it like this, that Rupa Goswami understood Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire, therefore he wrote so many books, and the other Goswamis, they wrote so many books. Later on, Jiva Goswami sent Srinivas Narottam Shamananda out to preach in Bengal and Orissa with these books. They wanted this cult spread, not just for a few Babajis in Vrindavan. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the real way to follow Rupa Goswami is to preach Krishna consciousness, and for that we have to adopt Rupa Goswami's principle, which, of course, Rupa Goswami wrote so many verses, but one particular verse Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur selected as a very vital point in the whole direction of his mission, describing what is yukta vairagya anasaktasya vishayanya taham upayunyataha nibandhe krishna sambandhe nibandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchate, that if one is not attached to material sense enjoyment but at the same time uses everything in Krishna's service, that is proper renunciation. That means you don't renounce everything by pretending to, or by giving up its use. You use it, but you're not attached to it for sense gratification. The other is Falgu Vairagya, the Prapanchikatiya Bhudya Hari Sambandha Vastana. Mamukshabhi Parityago Vairangam Falgu Katyate. Falgu, meaningless renunciation, is to give something up without understanding that its relationship with Hari, it can be used in the service of Lord Hari. Everything can be used. Prabhupada gave the example that when he was commenting on the nectar of devotion, that this dictaphone I'm using, the person who invented this dictaphone, he didn't think, yes, this will be used by Bhaktivedanta Swami for making his books which will spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. He thought this will advance the progress of human civilization. He had no idea of it being used in Krishna's service, and probably had never heard of Krishna either. But as it's there, it may be used in Krishna's service. Not only may it be used in Krishna's service, but should be and must be. Because the modern age is such that if we are at all to preach Krishna consciousness, we have to adapt to the circumstances. Now, if we are to, of course, we have our ISKCON Padyatra, but if we only had Padyatra, and that also without sending the books by trucking company, if someone had to carry them, or without printing books, if we were only to write books out by hand and walk village to village, it's not practical in the modern age to spread Krishna consciousness by such a means. So rather, everything that has been invented should be used in the service of Krishna for spreading his glories. The TV that is being used by the demons for degrading society. But devotees can also use that to go on TV and preach to everyone, chant Hare Krishna. So this point of sewn cloth, that was also traditionally, even now you'll see all the priests in the temples, they don't wear sewn cloth. In North India they do, it's so cold there in the winter. You have to wear some kind of shirt or something. Even they wear sweaters and all kinds of things. But here in South India you'll find that the priest going to worship in the temple, they'll never wear any sewn cloth. Now they're allowing in the temples people to wear shirts and pants, but previously they were very traditional, they didn't allow that. But nowadays it seems that they've compromised, because if you say no one should wear shirts or pants in the temple, no one will come, because they're not accustomed. They wouldn't even know how to put on a dhoti, quite likely, many of the people. I don't know, I wasn't here, but I would imagine that 20 years ago in Madras, you'd hardly see shirt and pants, is it? Was it? Mostly everyone was wearing the dhoti. Now it's difficult, it's around the other way. It's difficult to find people wearing a dhoti. And they don't even know how to wear it. You see, that's in the West. When some young man joins our movement, the first thing you have to show how to put on a dhoti, and they don't know how to do it. It's the same thing in India now. They don't know how to wear a dhoti. The thing which their forefathers wore for so many years. So times have changed. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would wear sewn cloth. Not all the time. If you see, just like this photo, that's a picture of him in the mud. Generally, he would wear very simple clothing when he was in the mud. But when he went out for preaching to some grand function, which they, just like when he came to Madras, he came on the Howrah Madras mail, the same train, same timing, same timetable for since so many years. All these trains, Amritsar to Bombay, Paschim Express, it's the same timing, going back for so many years. So when he got down at Madras, there was a huge function in which the Chief Justice of Tamil Nadu, and there was a Boy Scouts brass band, and all the elites, as they call them in India, although in English it's pronounced elite, and you don't say the elites. You say it's an adjective, actually, not a noun. But anyway, all the elites, they were there to greet him. And there was a big function. So you'll see a picture of him in that function, very gorgeously dressed with a big coat and shoes and socks and so many different things. So for this kind of function, he would dress in a just like the dignitaries. They would dress for, probably even the dignitaries at home, they'd wear a lungi. But when they come out into public, they're a dignitary. So they should wear dignified clothing. The same thing, if Pranananda goes to meet all the big men, he goes with some kind of jata. You know, this all his matted hair and a big beard and a trident and with maybe some snakes wrapped around him like this. Then they're not likely to accept him. But if he goes very nicely, with nice, neatly dressed, then the people there, because that's the way in modern life. that people, they dress very neatly. This is considered proper for business. So he also has some business to take their money away from them. So he should come dressed like that. So that is the adjustment. Now, another point here we see. Here it says in Prabhupada's books, a sannyasi should not dress himself in clothing sewn with a needle. It's in Prabhupada's books. You should follow Prabhupada's books, isn't it? There are so in Prabhupada's books you'll also find that a sannyasi, he should collect food, I think, from not more than 7 homes. Then he should go to the side of a river, offer it, and eat it. Do any sannyasis in our movement do that? Has anyone ever done it? Brahmachari should wear he should have a little stick and a mekala, this kind of the belt made from, what's it made from? And kusha grass. And then he should wear clothing made of tree bark. Right? You're a brahmachari? Why aren't you wearing clothing made of tree bark? He's a grihastha. All right, we'll find out what the grihasthas are supposed to do, too. Do you have a fire in your home? And what kind of grihastha are you? You should have a fire, isn't it? Traditional family, you have to have the fire burning, going on. Never extinguished. Now you have the gas, you see, and matches. So times have changed, but it says in Prabhupada's books, you see, a brahmachari should dress himself with a tree bark. So there has to, in other words, the point I'm making, there has to be some intelligence also to understand what's in Prabhupada's books. That even though there are many instructions, not every instruction is meant for everybody. Obviously this instruction, how the brahmachari should dress, that was meant for a particular time and circumstance when people were living in the Vedic age and brahmacharis, they would live in the forest or in the gurukul with the guru. Times have changed. So you have to see also what Prabhupada did. What was his practical example? He never asked any of his brahmacharis to dress in tree bark. And if anyone, after reading that, did it, he'd probably chastise them. What a fool you are for dressing like that. So we have to see also by the behavior of the acharya what he practically did and what he practically taught us to do. That's why we have to see all of Prabhupada's instructions together, what he actually did. Sometimes we have very important instructions in Prabhupada's letters. And in another place there may be an instruction in Prabhupada's letter or conversation which maybe someone may misapply that also. Just like if Prabhupada writes in a letter that something, you should take this medicine. So it doesn't mean that everyone should take that medicine every day of their life for all, because Prabhupada wrote, you should take this. Now you have to. It requires some intelligence to understand. Now another point is that in the early days of the movement, Prabhupada, practically there were no rules. The only rule is chant Hare Krishna, and if you can't do that, at least take some prasadam. In the early days, Prabhupada was initiating people. They didn't even know what it meant to be initiated. And they had all long hair and they had no idea. So if we see some of the early instructions or how Prabhupada taught deity worship, and then later on how Prabhupada instructed, we have to understand that Prabhupada was gradually introducing the rules and regulations. So if there's a difference between Prabhupada's earlier instructions and his later instructions, then generally we should understand we should follow the later rule. And actually Prabhupada, many of the things he hadn't finished in some, he said himself that he said 50% of my work I feel is not done, and that's amazing considering what he did. He said, I hadn't introduced Varnashram Dharma. You'll find many places in Prabhupada's books. It says you have to introduce Varnashram Dharma. Now, in other places, Prabhupada says it's not possible to fully introduce Varnashram Dharma according to all the rules previously. Just like we don't expect that at any point in time, that according to the old Varnashram system, our brahmacharis will dress in tree bark clothing. So it requires some intelligence how to introduce that. But at the same time, you have to see the direction Prabhupada was moving in. Just like, for instance, there was some paper published fairly recently in which it was said that, well, when I joined the movement, in the Tulsi Aarti, the men and women used to circumambulate at the same time, all mixed up together. So that was Prabhupada's instruction. We should go back to doing that. Why do you discriminate between men and women? They should all do it together. But in the beginning, there was no discrimination. It was just that later, devotees came to India. Prabhupada wanted devotees to come to his Western devotees to come to India to see the Vedic culture and to adopt that. I remember years ago, back in the 1970s, must have been about 78 or something, Jayapataka Maharaj saying something to me which shocked me at the time, but and now I've understood it. I hope I've understood it. He said that Prabhupada wanted the Western devotees to come to India because practically they have no idea to behave. They're just like animals. I was a little shocked to hear that. But of course our devotees have learned many things in the meantime. But actually it's a fact. The Western way of life, as Prabhupada said many times, is just cat and dog life. That's all. Because they're only interested in sense gratification. So their whole culture is just evolved on the basis of sense gratification. Whereas the Vedic culture, of which the modern Hindu culture is the... I mean, what modern Hindu culture, there are so many speculations. But it's based, even though it's not the pure original form properly following the Shastras and Acharyas. It's not the proper original form of the Vedic culture, but it is the closest to anything sane in the world. Of course, that's all breaking down nowadays also. As I was asked this question about women going out to work, and what to speak going out to work, previously you wouldn't even see on the street hardly. Isn't it? Women wouldn't come out, you wouldn't see them hardly. Rasaraj Prabhu was telling me that when he was going to college, he heard one Muslim boy say to another Muslim, "Oh, I saw a Brahmin girl," because they didn't see. They had the idea Brahmin girl must be something extraordinarily beautiful, because it's some kind of fantasy like that, because they were never seen. So they thought, well, if we saw them, maybe they're very beautiful. So, I saw a Brahmin girl. Now a Brahmin girl from Madras, millions of people are... She's retired now, but she paraded herself all over the screen for so many in the Hindi movies. Sridevi. She's a Brahmin girl from Madras, right? So how the time have changed. How the times have changed. Still, whatever is there in Indian culture, the real Indian culture, that is very good. And we still see that. Still there are some remnants going on. Still, whatever it is, it's better than the West. So Prabhupada wanted the devotees from the West to learn that. And many things, devotees, they came to India, they saw, they came back to the West, and they started to introduce these things. And Prabhupada never stopped that. He didn't say, why are the men and women not circumambulating together next to each other in the Tulsi Aarti? No, some separation started to be introduced. So, of course, that may have been done in a somewhat fanatical way, and like many of the things early in our movement. But the basic principle is there. As Prabhupada wrote, and also the devotees are reading Prabhupada's books in which he discusses these things, as Prabhupada writes in one purport, that if a person doesn't understand the basic principle, Prabhupada writes, the basic principle of separation of men and women, then he is nothing but an animal. And Prabhupada's very heavy, but spiritual life is very heavy. And what, when we talk about fall down from devotional service, what does it mean? In 99% of cases, it means fall down into illicit sex. That's the binding force in this material world. Therefore, in the Vedic culture, there was so much careful, a lot of caution. Because man is like butter, woman is like fire. So naturally when the two things come together, there's some melting. Therefore Vedic culture, for the sake of both spirit souls, both in male and female bodies, protected both of them by assigning different duties according to their psychophysical makeup. As Prabhupada many times pointed out, the woman bears the child, Now, if you want to be equal, all equal in all respects, then you should, why don't you say, well, you know, now we're all equal. Now, I bore one child, now my husband should bear one. Maybe you could do it by some kind of modern medicine. They're doing so many strange things. But by God's arrangement, a woman bears the child, and milk comes in her breast, not in the father's breast, to feed the child. And they, a woman has that tendency also, motherly tendency. You see, young girls, they like to play with, in the West they've introduced dolls and all this, but here you'll see the young girls, they like to look after the little children. That is their natural motherly tendency. Although that's also being changed in the modern age, because girls are brought up to, you should have a career. Don't have children, have a career. So there's a natural distinction. Even there's one book in the West which has analyzed this, saying that men are from Mars and women are from the Moon. In other words, you heard of that book? Is it from Venus? Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't read the book. You caught me out. I'm a bluffer. In other words, it's they're so much different, it's almost like they're from different planets. So how to put them together? And at the same time, they have to go together. I read one story, I don't know if it's from one of the Puranas. I remember reading this before I joined the movement. I used to read different folk stories from different parts of the world. So there was a story, it may be a folk story, about how Lord Brahma, in the beginning of creation, or maybe it was Manu anyway, he made man. And then he was feeling lonely, so he made a woman and said, oh, thank you very much, that's very nice. So after some time, he went back and said, hey, this is too much. Just take her away, I want to be alone again. You know, I say, I just can't get on with her. So then after some time, he went back again and said, look, you know, give her back. You know, it's too much trouble, but anyway, it's better than having no company. Give her back. So this went on back and forth for some time, and then finally Brahma said, look, do you want to live with her or not? Make your choice. He said, okay, I'll keep her. So there's a difference. And how to make the best of a bad bargain. This human life is a bad bargain. Any material body, it's bad. We should have a spiritual body, neither male or female body. We're not these bodies. We're not men, we're not women. How to make the best use of a bad bargain? The Vedic literature gives the best information on how to do that, because the Vedic literature is based on a proper understanding of the purpose of life and of how to attain, and of how to act in such a way that one may become fully purified. Now the Vedic literatures, they recommend renunciation, the vritti marg, don't become entangled, but at the same time recognizes that for most people it's not possible simply to say, okay, now we'll all go to the forest and we'll be completely renounced and just live on dried leaves. It's not possible. So family life is necessary for most people, but there is a direction how to live within family life so that we can fulfill the purpose of family life, which is to have children and train them how to properly behave in human society and become devotees of Krishna, and at the same time ourselves become spiritually advanced and eventually become detached from that and become attached to Krishna. So the Vedic literature gives the best directions. Now in modern life, they don't like these directions because it goes against the purpose of sense gratification. And modern society is based on sense gratification. There's one book, I was told, I didn't see it, which was translated from Sanskrit by a Tamil... No, was either Sanskrit or Tamil. It's by a women's liberationist. It's called The Ideal Woman. And the book, it's in Sanskrit, it's called like Nari Kritya or something like this. So it describes how the ideal woman should behave, and it says she should try to please her husband in all the usual things that you see in Chanakya Niti or anywhere. So then the commentary is given that why should the woman try, why should she be submissive to her, why shouldn't her husband be submissive to her? But that is there is a reason. This is coming from the Vedic literature. Means ब्रह्म प्रमाद विप्रलिप्स करण पठव आर्य विज्ञ वाक्य नहीं दोषेश ब्रह्म प्रमाद विप्रलिप्स करण पठव मिस्टेक्स इल्यूजन चीटिंग एंड इल्यूजन mistakes, illusion, cheating, and imperfect senses. These defects are not found in the words of the great rishis and acharyas. Therefore, what is given in Shastra, that is perfect for human society. So, these directions, they are general directions for human society at all times and all places. They may be adjusted, just like we see here about the sewing cloth. It may not be possible to follow everything in the modern age, as it was previously. Previously, and still some families they do, not many, the woman during the menstrual period, she would have a separate house. No bathing, wouldn't be seen even. So that may not be practical in the modern age where there isn't a joint family. If there's only a nuclear family, then all the burden is on one woman, whereas previously in the joint family all the duties were shared out. So if one was out for a few days, it didn't matter because there were others to cover up. In the modern life, that may not be possible. So there may be some adjustment. That's one example. There may be so many different adjustments. If we say that, well, women should only stay at home, that may not be possible in the modern age. They shouldn't come out of the house. Not that they didn't come out of the house, they also came to the temples. But of course, in the villages, the temple would be there and the houses would be there. You didn't have to get on a bus and come 10 kilometers and squash up all men and women together on the bus. And life was different. It was more, that was civilized life. Now we're living in the uncivilized. Modern life is uncivilized. So there may be some adjustment. The purpose is the same. How to become Krishna conscious. But still we should understand that the basic principles of the Vedic literature, they are for the highest benefit of human society. Therefore they should be introduced as much as possible in the modern age. Although how far to introduce them, how much it's possible, that we have to see whether our intelligence, and even much better than our own intelligence, is to see how our acharya has introduced these things. Just like sewn cloth. That is a detail. Which is, it may not be so very important in the modern age, because by the very nature of the modern age, we're breaking so many rules. Just like I gave this example many times, if you have an attached bathroom in your home, that's considered an essential requisite in the modern age. But actually it makes everything impure. That means the whole home is absolutely, the whole home is equivalent to being a toilet, if it's attached. Even in what to speak of in India, even in the Western countries, they used to have the toilet at a distance. Outhouse, it was called the outhouse. In Ireland, you saw that? Still, the old cottages, they're like that, huh? In Russia, still, in the villages, they have an outhouse. You go outside, you don't pass stool right in the... You go in the next room, you're sitting, and you go and it should be at some distance because it's so contaminated and unhygienic. So even these basic rules of hygiene, when you see them, we're using this tissue, this is another disgusting thing. Put it back in your pocket and you should spit and wash and everything. Now times have changed. So these, which rules to follow, which rules not to follow, that we have to see. But basic rules of social behavior, we should understand and implement them as much as possible. Hare Krishna. Is there any question, please? No question.
In the beginning you said that we can use the things for the Krishna service and not to be attached. How do you understand we are not attached?
Well, that's the problem. We say we should use the thing in Krishna's service and not be attached, but many times we are attached. So we have to cultivate a sense of detachment. If we say, yes, I'm living in a luxury bungalow, it's all for preaching. But we don't do any preaching. I mean, maybe then that's attachment. Therefore, a devotee's life, vairagya vidya, as much as possible, should be detached on the basis of knowledge. Everything can be used in the service of Krishna, but we have to be careful because we have the tendency to be attached also. So the test will be how much we're actually using in the service of Krishna. Do we really need all the things we have? Can we do our service just as well without it? Jai Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. His divine grace.